Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Report podcast. Today is Tuesday, April the 25th. And first, a word from our sponsors. It's never too early to start thinking about your retirement, and there's never been a better time to invest in your future than right now. Adam Puff at Haddonfield Financial Planning is a trusted friend of the Freedom Report and someone who can help you make your money work for you. Don't work hard, work smart. Let Adam work for you. Call Adam Puff at 856-795-0471. That's 856-795-0471 for all your retirement, 401k, estate, small business, and other financial needs. That's 856-795-0471 and get your free consultation today. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Wealth Management Associates, Inc., Haddonfield Financial Planning, Wealth Management Associates, and Securities America are unaffiliated. Welcome back to the show, Liberty Peeps. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Freedom Report podcast. As usual, you can download us on iTunes or on Stitcher or on the mobile Podbean app. Podbean is the host of the show, and we are actually one of the number one shows on this network. So thank you very much for making us a big success. If you're listening to us on Facebook Live, do me a favor, click the share button before you continue to listen so that other people can join us and we can have a good time today. All right, so today we are talking about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. We're talking about the issue of trade and liberty and capitalism. And a couple of stories have come out that raised my eyebrows this morning, and I wanted to talk to you about them. Ben Shapiro, who is a conservative columnist, if you're not familiar with him, he's got a big background, had a famous falling out with Breitbart. He's now the editor of the Daily Wire. And I've been listening to Ben Shapiro for a couple of years now. He strikes me as someone who's one of the few sane members of the prominent conservative intelligentsia out there. Very intelligent guy. He's frequently a critic of social justice warriors and some of the weirder aspects of the cultural left. And a prominent critic of the social justice movement that has gone absolutely insane. So he's really become a big hero to a lot of conservatives and libertarians. And he's someone who I have come to admire as well, especially when I read articles like what I'm seeing in the National Review today, written by him. This is coming out on April the 20th, so about 5 days ago. But it's a terrific piece and one that I wanted to share with you as well. And this is titled, Trump's Hire American, Buy American is Redistribution by Another Name. Subsidizing some at the expense of others is old school leftism and won't make America great again. This week, President Trump reiterated his commitment to his Hire American, Buy American program, a supposedly crucial element in his economic nationalist program. The notion here is threefold. American companies should be forced to hire American labor. Government contracts should go to American companies. American producers should be protected from domestic competition by revoking or altering international trade agreements. All three of these policies have a long, ingloriously stupid history. First, the notion that American companies should be fired to hire American labor is a conceit of the left. It is based on the same failures of economic understanding that led to advocating higher minimum wages, the notion that cramming through an increase in labor costs does not cost jobs to a company, does not raise costs to the consumer, and does not degrade the quality of future products. Yet Trump and other protectionists, such as Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Ann Coulter, have long seen H-1B visas, supposedly high-tech visas allowing workers to enter the United States to fill jobs for domestically based companies, as a great bugaboo. There are certainly significant problems with the current administration of H-1B visas. Michelle Malkin has rightly pointed out that there are those who falsely sponsor immigrants to the United States without any intention of employing them. And she is also right to criticize the H-1B lie that workers from abroad never replace American workers, and the inflated claim that there is a serious shortage of Americans qualified to fill jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math jobs, or STEM. Other valid critiques of H-1B visas are that they tie visa holders to jobs and give employers total leverage over them. But there is a broader ideological critique that is simply false. The notion that America benefits as a country by heavily restricting its labor base rather than by expanding the pool of qualified applicants. There is a strong case to be made that in a welfare state, we should curb any program that increases the domestic unemployment rate, because the taxpayers absorb the burden of the increased number of the unemployed. But there is no evidence that high-tech visas increase the unemployment rate. Let me repeat that again. There is no evidence that high-tech visas increase the unemployment rate, since high-tech companies will simply shift production overseas to take advantage of lower wages there and similar job qualifications. This deprives American companies of jobs. The goal of an economy is to create better products and services at lower price, thereby creating new cycles of supply and demand. The goal of an economy is not to freeze the available pool of labor, thereby confiscating wealth from employers on behalf of employees lucky enough to be born in the United States. It's difficult to understand why people who think that we should have a closed immigration system in order to preserve jobs don't also think that we should have dramatically higher minimum wages or forced price controls. Second, Trump's program of ensuring that government contracts go to American companies makes little sense, given that this is merely a government subsidy of popular political interests. Why should taxpayers foot the bill for cement made in Pennsylvania rather than China, absent some political payoff from politicians? And in fact, Trump's new program allows widespread waivers for government contracts if the government decides that product or pricing is insufficient from American suppliers. Let me say that again. Trump's new program allows widespread waivers for government contracts if the government decides that product or pricing is insufficient from American suppliers. As Kevin Williamson wrote earlier this week, in practice, that means that if you have the right friends and make the right donations, the Buy American rules may be used to steer contracts your way. If you don't, they won't. Finally, Trump's program of producing everything in America is economically illiterate. Earlier this year, alleged White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus stated, "We can make everything here, our goal should be to try to make everything we can in the United States so the money gets put in the pockets of Americans." That's not only untrue, it's simply nutty. Subsidizing domestic industry and cutting off imports in order to help the economy is a fool's errand. Back in the 1930s, Nazi Germany embarked on a course of autarky, assuming that they could strengthen the domestic economy through a combination of subsidies and tariffs. The result, which Hitler actually wanted, a requirement for territorial expansion, since trade enriches countries with resources beyond their own borders. North Korea is autarkic today, so is Venezuela. Both are impoverished. Trade enriches both sides. Banning trade indirectly taxes certain domestic parties in behalf of others. But this is truly the tyrannical side of economic nationalism, the idea that your freedom as an individual to engage in commerce must be made subservient to a sort of collectivist loyalty test. In its own way, it is no different than Joe Biden's statement some years ago that paying higher taxes made you more patriotic. But patriotism isn't about restricting your freedom and prosperity to help someone in a dying industry. It's about upholding a system of freedom for everyone, even those who benefit more from those freedoms. Economic nationalism is FDR's economic interventionism, and Herbert Hoover's anti-trade policy repackaged. Donald Richberg, the second head of FDR's National Recovery Administration, stated that America had to reject, quote, gold-plated anarchy that masqueraded as, quote, rugged individualism. Instead, America should embrace the great essential industries operated under public obligation appropriate to the public interest in them. In this logic, economic freedom should be made subservient to the supposed national interest. The result? The greatest depression in American history, relieved only by the full-scale militarization of American society in World War II. It is not America First policy to put American individualism last and government redistributionism first. That policy kills jobs and destroys liberty. Trump should know that as a businessman. He must learn it as president. A very, very good article from Ben Shapiro. And I saw, as I was reading this, this popped up a related story that I also wanted to share with you from Mike Rowe. And Mike Rowe appeared on Tucker Carlson recently to discuss the Buy American, Hire American policy. And he didn't quite blast it as well as much as he was a tad skeptical. So I wanted to read this from you as well, because Mike Rowe is someone who I greatly respect as well. Tends to lean towards the right. At least he just is. When I say he leans towards the right economically, I mean that he's being honest on economic issues. So let me read this to you as well. This is from The Blaze. Former Dirty Jobs host Mike Rowe expressed some doubt about President Donald Trump's Buy American, Hire American policy. He explained why in a segment on Tucker Carlson this Monday. When Rowe was asked by Carlson if he was surprised by the popularity of Trump's policy, he said no, but he was nervous about it for two reasons. Quote, "First of all, I'm not sure I really understand it, to be honest. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and it's an executive order, and it's full of a lot of fine print," Rowe said. "Secondly, and more importantly, it feels like it might be a shortcut, and as my pop used to say, shortcuts lead to long delays. I don't know if it is or isn't." Quote, "If the executive order makes things more fair," he continued, "if it does something to clamp down on currency manipulation and a whole lot of other things, I also really don't understand. It feels like it happens in the global economy that disadvantages our country, then I'm all for it. But if it's one of these things that is ultimately going to bring about some unintended consequences, I get nervous." He says, "Look, I'm nervous about the minimum wage because I think when we raise it to hurry up to get to an endpoint," he explained, "it's like that whack-a-mole game. Something else pops up somewhere, and it's like rent control. And I want an environment where the companies who are most responsible for hiring are dramatically encouraged by the market to keep the business here. And if we get ahead of ourselves and make it by fiat or some kind of mandate, I just figure that mole is going to pop out of another hole and we're going to have to whack it." Rowe explained that his concerns came out of an understanding of what the American consumer prefers to buy, even if they outwardly say they want others to buy and hire American. "Look, once upon a time in another life, I had to deal with a blue jean company," Rowe said. "And part of what I wanted to do was give the consumer a really clear choice between jeans that were made in America and jeans that were made overseas. And they were identical, these jeans. I mean, I could show you research one day if you're into it. But it was remarkable how the price difference was everything," he continued. "Until those two jeans, the American made and the overseas, were the identical same price, there was absolutely no push, no incentive for the consumer to buy American. So it's not just the worker, and it's not just the boss, it's us," he concluded. And two brilliant points of view from two brilliant men who I very much admire. And the reason why I wanted to share these with you is because, of course, I do disagree with the sort of economic nationalism, because it does harken back to the days of FDR and the protectionism that led us to get into the Great Depression. So I have to oppose this, not only from a liberty standpoint, from a personal liberty standpoint, that these businesses should be allowed to purchase goods and services to share with the American people as they see fit from a rights perspective, but from an economic perspective, it's what the American people want. And the problem is, of course, is that many of these countries will, excuse me, many of these companies will advocate for protectionism as long as it benefits them and as long as it harms the smaller producers. But there's nobody that goes out and advocates for the consumer, really, right? There's no real Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, right? The government group that does that is, you know, ostensibly designed to protect the consumer, but as with many government agencies, frequently it ends up doing the opposite. But yes, Ben Shapiro has really nailed this down. This is economic leftism in the guise of America First. So, and that has always been my problem with many of the paleo conservative movement, that it's build a wall, but not the physical wall, right? It's build a wall against international trade. And if you're not familiar with this, I've discussed this topic before, but you should definitely do a little bit of research into the Smoot-Hawley tariff that occurred during the financial crisis in the United States. I'm going to pull up some of these facts for you as well and just read this to you as well. So what it was an act sponsored by Smoot and Hawley, signed into law on June 17th, 1930. And it raised U.S. tariffs on over 20,000 imported goods. And it was the second highest in the United States in 100 years, exceeded only by a small margin by the tariff of 1828. And it helped reduce American exports and imports by more than half during the Depression. And economists disagree by exactly how much. But there is another article from the Foundation for Economic Education that I'm going to drop into the Facebook chat or the live stream that you can read as well to go into more details about the Smoot-Hawley tariff and how it exacerbated and continued to grow the Great Depression that was already setting in. So I'll share that with you all, and I hope that you will enjoy it. But what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Do you think that Buy American is a good thing? Is this really economic redistributionism? I mean, in my opinion, it is, because in some sense, it's forcing the American people to subsidize failing industries. And that's offensive, right? If social justice warriors get offended by saying there are two, you know, genders, biological genders, well, then the social justice warriors are the right. I guess we'll call them the what are we calling them these days? The patriotically correct police? The patriotically correct police are the ones who want to redistribute the wealth of the American consumer into businesses that can't compete in a globalized economy. Globalism or globalization. Yes, you can use those terms interchangeably to the Prison Planet Info Warriors crew who's out there. Yes, globalization is a good thing. It's a good thing for American consumers. But the other day, Breitbart published an article that was very much the a sort of, you know, pamper the butt type of piece. I think it was by John Carney over at Breitbart, and he was writing about how, you know, this protectionism is good for for the American people. It's good for creating jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, Ben Shapiro debunks this in totem. But what do you think? I mean, do you think that this is economic redistribution? I sure do. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Drop them in the comments. Send me a message on Facebook if you like at facebook.com/producerPeterson. Follow me on Twitter at AP4Liberty. That's AP, the number 4, Liberty. Follow me on Twitter there. And of course, you can always find the Freedom Report on iTunes or on Stitcher if you'd like to download and listen to it on the go in your car. We do stream these as well on Facebook. I don't do the live streams anymore on YouTube, of course, because of the great demonetization scandal. After having a couple of my videos demonetized that had, you know, that weren't politically incorrect at all whatsoever, they were simply just about the conflict in Syria, they're just mostly journalism and news. I don't do my live streams over there anymore because on principle, but I do share the live streams that I do on Facebook over to YouTube. So if that's the way you can do, if that's the way that you listen to these, you can find them at youtube.com/AUGGYP. Thanks very much for listening, folks, and have a great day.